Hey guys, welcome to Noflix Given. I'm one of your hosts, Frank, and it is actually pronounced nuclear. So let's just get that right out of the gate.
Nope. We're not starting like that. We're not doing
that's going in. That's already locked in. I can't go back. I'll start again. I feel like I didn't like
it. Oh, that was great. Come on.
And now, our feature presentation.
So, we're here on the height of spooky season to bring you guys a little bit of a Halloween-themed episode, and I want to...
So, you know, height of spooky season, I can't go anywhere now, because there's always something animatronic and moving. My neighbor, two houses down, got one of those 12-foot skeletons in their yard, and he added some animatronics to it. Now it moves, and now I can't go outside at night.
Boy.
So the eyes also glow. It's actually pretty cool. But basically...
Long Gonzo is somewhere in the bushes, Peter.
Always lurking.
Peter, I will say, though, like the purchase of a 12-foot animatronic is like a real big decision a household has to make. And it's a lot of responsibility, and you have to sort of raise it up on the lawn, and you have to take good care of it.
That's right, Frank.
You know something about that.
I do know something about that. I'm now a father. Yay. We did it.
Of more than just 12-foot lawn ornaments. We should stipulate that.
Of an actual human child.
Yeah, yes, of a small tiny human boy. Actually,
while we're mentioning that, Peter, how do you feel now about picking Rosemary's Baby for our last episode? Just having had that experience,
you know, it made
we were leading up to it when we recorded that episode, and now we're here.
Yeah,
tell me your feelings.
No, to give a peek behind the curtain, that was like 2 months ago, and honestly, it made the actual birthing process like much more approachable. So, you know, if you're nervous about that, just go watch Rosemary's Baby, and I promise you it's not as bad. It is much weirder, but it's not as bad. At least there's no demons and cults, ideally.
As far as you know.
As far as I know. Mm-hmm. But back to how we actually, you know, got to pick this movie. Basically, because I'm a coward, Frank was very kind and made a master spreadsheet and gave a scale of movies that will be appropriate for the season and how scary they were. And I chose one from the not so scary list. And that's how we ended up with
what was this on the Frankter scale of fear? I don't know what I actually rated this as. It was a 1 out of 10. And I have like 10 is like a Hereditary or like a Pet Sematary or something. 1 is like a Casper Meets Wendy. They're all Halloween movies.
And without looking at it, I would call this like a 3 or a 4. Like, it's really not scary.
Feels right.
How would you rate the Halloween Tree in comparison on the scale?
I think the Halloween Tree is actually a touch scarier.
Huh. Mm. Like a 3, 5, 4?
I put this squarely at like Hocus Pocus level. And I think this actually shares a lot of DNA with Hocus Pocus.
Let's see what I rated it as, because now I'm curious. Hocus Pocus, I gave a 3.
Okay.
And I'm looking for Monster Squad,
you also had at a 3.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so perfect. We're all on the same page.
Similarly to Ghostbusters, Beetlejuice, The Nightmare Before Christmas, and The Addams Family.
I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. That's a good tier. We need to get you higher. You need to at least hit a 6, I think.
Listen,
Rosemary's Baby is like a 7.
Rosemary's Baby is much scarier. I mean, when we did The Blob, and I believe that was pre-Noflix Given, much scarier, but I enjoyed the shit out of The Blob.
Oh, I love The Blob. Love The Blob.
I think that was this time last year. You know, I have a higher tolerance than I think I do, I think, for a lot of scary stuff. But this is where I landed. And honestly, a very enjoyable new movie. Not to bury the lead too much, but I enjoyed the shit out of this movie.
We said the name of the movie.
I was
right?
about to say, while we're here, would somebody like
it's
to
in
announce
the title.
What movie we're watching?
Did we really not say the name of the... I thought I was a bad listener.
No, we didn't.
No, we're 7 minutes into this recording, and we haven't said the words, The Monster Squad.
From 1987.
Monster Squad.
Which I feel like it needs to kick in with that theme after every time you say it. There's the a couple of notes of that like late 80s rap.
Oh, that's awful. It was so bad.
That's a terrible rap. One thing about the Monster Squad, before we get into the episode proper, that I noticed was everything, every bit of documentation referring to this movie refers to it specifically as the Monster Squad, not Monster Squad, which is obviously the better title. You get rid of the V.
Do you know why?
Because the TV show?
Because of the TV show.
The TV show. There was a TV show in the 70s called Monster Squad that had actually a fairly similar plot to the Monster Squad movie.
Yeah. But the monsters were like the heroes, and it only lasted for 13 episodes.
All right. That'll be our next episode. But shall we go watch it?
Yeah, let's put it in.
Yeah, throw that in the VHS.
Let's put the tape in.
When you have ghosts. But who do you call when you have monsters?
We're the Monster Squad.
What's a squad? It's like Miami Vice, I think.
When strange things start happening in town.
There's a monster in my closet.
They're the only ones ready to do battle.
Somebody's out there and is killing people. And if it's monsters, nobody's gonna do a thing about it but us.
Soon the creatures of the night shall rule the world.
Monster Squad.
Wolfman's got
nails. So we're back, and we have the combinations. Okay, so we watched Monster Squad.
Wait, did we find a virgin? You got to find a virgin to read in German.
I thought you said that's a version. I'm like, is there a director's cut? I don't know what you're talking about. let's get into... All right. Before that's very... that's so deep, the virgin part of this. What's everyone's history with this movie, if anything? So, like, Matt, what do you got as far as, like, have you seen this before?
I had never seen it before and had only heard of it, seen clips of it, was aware that it existed as a concept, but that was ultimately it. I'd never actually sat down and made an effort to watch it until now.
Okay, before we get your reaction to it, Peter... Had you seen this before?
Had never seen it, did not know that it existed, had never heard of it.
Okay, so your first time. Connor, I'm assuming you've seen this.
Actually, I hadn't, which is, having seen it today for the first time is shocking to me, genuinely.
Wow. Wow.
No, it was a movie that I had heard of a few years ago. I think a podcast I listened to talked about it at one point. Yeah, I'd seen it referenced on YouTube, and I sort of was vaguely aware that it existed, but no, the prime age that I would have been introduced to this movie is sort of like the age of the kids that are in the movie, and sure. Unfortunately, when this movie came out, I was but a few months old, so it sort of like skated by me, just sort of by the vicissitudes of time.
What did you all think of it now?
I enjoyed it. I think I said in the intro before we put the movie in that it shares a lot of DNA with Hocus Pocus, which is a movie that I absolutely love. It's like if Hocus Pocus met the Goonies met the Universal Monsters. Yeah. And I found all of that to just be like super low stakes delightful. With like all of the sort of grime of an 80s tween movie, like, because this isn't like a movie targeted at like 16 year olds. This is a movie that is like squarely targeted at like 10 to 12 year olds.
Sure, yeah, I think it's got that amount of sort of like how scary it gets is prime for that preteen age.
Well, and like the age of the kids that you're focusing on and sure. all that jazz. Like, so I thought it was great. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Anybody else?
This movie was. Unfortunately, very handicapped for me, especially in the realm of movies that we have watched for the podcast, because for Fix a Flick, for our old podcast, Peter and I had watched The Goonies and talked about how awesome mm-hmm. it was.
One of my favorites we've recorded.
And for one of our other, for one of our classic episodes of sort of the pre-unification era of No Flicks Given, Halloween a couple years ago, we watched The Lost Boys. Mm-hmm. And I watched this movie wanting it to lean deeper into Goonies slash Lost Boys territory the entire time. It sort of stayed a little bit too much on the kid side, on like the kiddie softer side of kids movie for me than I wanted it to. Cause if it had leaned sort of deeper into like the crassness of a Goonies movie about like the way like actual 12-year-olds talk to each other, using, you know, cursing and shit.
I mean, they drop some hard F's in this movie.
They do. They a variety of which, hard F's.
That is well, a wake up call when
that's the Shane Black of it all.
That is the Shane Black of it all.
The hard F's for us now that are no longer hard F's.
Yeah, like, no longer allowed F's.
Yeah.
No.
What are now hard F's? Yeah.
I don't want to get into this too deeply now, but there is a worldliness to the kids of the Goonies and to the kids of Lost Boys that the kids of Monster Squad don't have that I missed the entire run of the movie.
Okay. Matthew.
There are some peaks and valleys in this movie for me. Peaks, Stan Winston. Valleys, very much the fact that I think that the writer, like, so one of the strengths of movies like The Goonies or Lost Boys or some any other, like even Stand By Me, is a writer who can put themselves back in the head of a kid that age, and I feel like these writers didn't or couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it creates this idea of, like, this is what we think. There's very much a hello fellow kids thing going on.
Yeah.
And that kind of dampens certain stuff. And then I am aware that there was at least 10, if not more, minutes cut from the film.
Oh.
So that they could keep it under a 90-minute running time. So, like,
you feel it.
I could feel it more. You can feel that it's kind of getting chopped in a lot of different sequences.
It's missing a lot of connective tissue.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that just don't make sense in this movie at all.
Yeah, I think tone-wise too, like Connor was saying, is that it does vacillate a lot, but when it's trying to be like fun for the kids, I kept thinking, in much the same way that some meetings could be emails, it's like this could have just been a cartoon. when it goes into, like, I mean,
this could have been the Halloween tree.
Yes, this could have been the Halloween tree, especially like when we get to moments like Wolfman's Got Nards. Like, I don't, it doesn't fit in with the same thing where you literally explode a human being in a car. Don't get me wrong, the stunt was great, but those are two different movies.
Oh, there's far more than two movies in here. There is a, like, Lethal Weapon light happening in the background. There is
an E.T. plot
with the Frankenstein monster. There is a broken home divorce plot that, like, really give up on early on. This is my most frustrating type of movie where it's the least amount of tweaking you need to do to make it, like, pretty great. And it's got a lot of the pieces in there, and it just, like, fumbles the ball on the 1 yard line in so many different ways where I don't think this should be a movie that is an every year Halloween movie for people. And it kind of is. Amanda grew up with it, so she, like, that's who introduced me to it.
I think if you watched it as a kid, this would be a lot, because you would remember it fondly, but, like, it's aspiring to be a Spielberg film.
Yeah.
But, like, if we're comparing it, as you mentioned, to E.T., it's like E.T. doesn't quite make it to silhouette the moon. He just, like, hits the tops of those coniferous trees, and, like, his getting brush and stuff hit into his face. That's the level that Monster Squad is hitting.
Instead of him literally flying off the ramp, it's just like a little hop.
Yeah, and you just start to hear, like, the thwack of stuff, like, hitting E.T. as he's just sliding through the trees. Like, that's where we're at with this movie.
Before we get too far into it, just a quick sort of synopsis on what the Monster Squad is. Basically,
it's Abbott and Costello, like, meet Frankenstein with kids.
With kids. You saved me a lot of time. I was going to do a beat for beat. But, yeah, that's basically it. There is a doomsday plot with, like, the evil taking over the world kind of thing, and Dracula, Frankenstein, the mummy, the wolfman, and the gill man are all up against, like, a group of kids who, and this was, I couldn't believe this was what I got hung up on with this one. There's always something stupid that I just can't get past, was they are obsessed with monsters to begin with. I don't need that at all. I need them to be like normal kids that are like nerds. And then like by the end of the movie, they call themselves a Monster Squad.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that they are like the amount of times that the principal yells at them for drawing pictures of monsters in the beginning when it's like, it doesn't work. You like monsters is not a thing that kids were like a problem. There was not a problem with that. The way they describe it, like if it's drugs or sort of like,
no, they should be movie nerds. They should be kids that are like sneaking out or sneaking like to the living room for the 1 a.m. movie showing of Todd Browning's Dracula on local TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And clearly they just needed to sneak to that one kid's roof so they could look at the drive-in.
So honestly, that moment piece. That moment works for me.
Yeah,
that moment works. That you keep because that's great. Like, because
the dad works for me.
The dad's great.
I also think minimal changes, just lose the mom. There's no mom. Like, you don't need that. Like I know that because that actress is the short end of every 80s stick you can imagine. But like in this, like just have a single dad who's the same kind of cop guy. He's really good. All the stuff for me, and I know this is Shane Black, the year Lethal Weapon came out. All of the like banter buddy cop stuff works really well in this. And it way better than it should, I think, for this type of movie. Maybe I was just sort of like relieved to not have kids being like unnecessarily vulgar. And I know that's kind of how kids are, and it's a little true to it, but it didn't have the charm of like the E.T. kids or the Goonies kids.
But at the same time, it was really nice to kind of be in a world where at least you were getting tastes of that, where they were getting into fights and they were, you know, like peeping toms in windows and like, you know, doing stuff that like teenage boys did. And it was, it was kind of cool to see that again, because I can't think of a movie in the last 20 years that could even go that far, you know?
Right. No, the movies in the 80s, I mean, probably mostly due to like Stand By Me and the Goonies, really leaned into, you know, crass 13-year-olds, because a lot of like, you know, guys like Shane Black were becoming screenwriters that were sort of not necessarily remembering their childhoods, but sort of like, what if we were cool when we were kids? And actually part of what got lost for me was that the group of kids sort of became an amorphous blob of like children.
There's so many of them. There's like 10 of them.
Yeah. Like every once in a while, like an 8-year-old would show up that was obviously much young, not mature enough to be handling the situation. Like the kid that had the mummy in his room that would randomly show up later on.
Pretty late that they introduced that kid separate from, like, I think the first time you see him is there's a monster in my closet.
Yeah.
Which is a good scene.
It's a great scene.
But it could have just been a one-off. Like it could have been a one-off. This kid was
And then suddenly he's in the, this is the weird thing with like the structure and clearly the deleted scenes to it, where it's like, so you introduce that one kid and it's full on that scene from Lost World where it's like, there's a dinosaur on my window. It's that scene.
Yeah.
And then a scene or two later, that kid is like in the treehouse with the Monster Squad kids who call themselves Monster Squad. So there is a like club, and that kid being introduced in that order is just crazy to me. But speaking of like moments cut out and sort of like the jumbled mess of the editing, can we talk about the way that the main character learns Dracula is an element of this film?
I rewrote it. While I was watching that scene, I rewrote it 3 times to make it work.
Yeah.
So is there? This may have been my bad watch of the film, but was there a moment where somebody takes that note down by the phone?
No. That's what's crazy to me.
Yeah.
So real quick, before we dissect the scene, I just want to explain what happens here. In the movie, also kind of breezed over, is how the main character gets Van Helsing's diary. His mom like grabs it at a yard sale and so he gets the diary, right? And it's in German, he can't read it.
That's a couple scenes. That's later, a funny joke where she hands him Van Helsing's diary.
That works.
And he's like so excited to look at it. It's in German.
So then,
cut out of
at
the scene.
Some point, the main character, who's basically like Mikey from Goonies, is a good way to sort of think of him. He's very like headstrong and determined and very into the monster thing. The main character is sitting at his kitchen table and sees a note next to the phone of someone who called. And it says, Mr. Like,
Alucard.
Alucard.
Yeah, Alucard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Alucard left a message to help translate the diary. Some weird.
He wants to buy the diary back.
He wants to buy the diary. Okay. Yeah.
So potential big money. There's like $3.
Wants to buy the diary. We have not seen a scene where anyone has reached out about this diary. We have not seen a scene where some Mr. Alucard has called, which would have been good, and or anything. The main character, not aware monsters are a real thing in his town, sees the word Alucard, pulls out a piece of paper, and starts changing the letters to see what it spells, and ends up spelling out the word Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, oh my God, Dracula's real. He knows I have, like, the amount of things he... It's frustrating.
Matt, but you here's the thing: is it's not tense. Even it's not even an anagram. It's just Dracula backwards.
Yeah,
like it's doesn't. You don't anagram. Have to scrabble it in order to make yeah. it like to figure it out.
Just turn
if
the paper
kid had played it. Castlevania, he would know this.
Yes.
Okay.
Or read comic books, which we were saying would have been an important part of his character backstory.
I'd like to hear Connor's fixes here.
So, you have to have a scene where somebody that's not the parents, that's not either the dad or the mom, gets this. I don't mind it being like a phone message written on the like side of the by the side of the phone. But you have to have a message where like the housekeeper gets a phone call and writes the message down by the side of the phone, right?
Something. The house is chaotic. They're not really listening. And then at the very end, the phone hangs up and you pan up to who's talking and it's Dracula. You
exactly.
That
yeah, precise. Or not even that. You just sort of hear on the other side of the phone, right? Because you could totally sell this as a comedy bit of like, okay, Mr. Alucard. Okay, you want van? What? We're not selling a van.
Well, on the note, it calls it the Van Halen diary, which I appreciated,
that's
but it
funny.
Made the scene even more confusing.
I missed that, and that's very funny.
Yes,
good call.
So two things: either A, the person calling is that calls himself Mr. Alucard. The main character, whose name I don't remember, Sean, walks past like the bathroom, looks to his left, sees in the mirror Dracula spelt backwards.
Oh,
yeah, that would be.
I hate that. I like that.
Second option. The person who calls and says they're interested in buying the diary is Dr. Acula.
Dr. Acula.
Oh, no, I like the first one way better.
You know what's going to get cut in right here, right? Like,
no,
the only one scene that exists there. Do you remember Ed Wood?
Yeah, I know yeah. that both Alucard and Dr. Acula have been jokes in the past, but
Dr. Racula. I get it.
No, the Alucard thing with the mirror is better just because it's vampires and mirrors and shit,
and it's visual storytelling.
Doing yes. a Red Rum comparison is interesting because you're like hearkening to a much scarier movie without making your movie scarier.
Right.
I think
and you're
idea.
Showing and not telling, yeah. which is
and you can
again,
also build
always
tension.
The more interesting choice.
You can also build tension too as Sean sort of like walks past the mirror, does a double take, goes back into the room and starts getting closer and closer and closer to the mirror, and then like lightning shines through, you know. Matt, you yeah. have something to say. Go.
Well, taking a step back before even this happens, how and why does Dracula know that this family has the book?
Another part that was
yes.
omitted. Like, there is no...
Like, all we know about Dracula is he smuggles himself aboard the plane with Frankenstein, manages to get himself paratrooped into the exact right swamp that he needs to be paratrooped into, and then immediately somehow off-screen knows that, one, the book exists, two, that it's still in the area, and three, that this family has recently purchased it. And yeah, four, yeah. The phone number of the person that owns it, also that phones exist.
Exactly. A five, how to use a phone.
Yeah, so yeah, like, there's yeah, a yeah. lot of leaps that I have to make before we even get to the jokes about Alucard Dracula.
You can even go back further, Matt, because Dracula parachutes out of this plane, and then the very next scene, he has this very casual, unmarked hearse with a silver skull that he is just screaming down the road.
It's fucking rad.
Oh, it's yes. awesome. But apparently, like, he's like had it on layaway while he's been out of the country. Like,
yeah, there's a version of this film where Dracula A knows who he is in culture, and B acts like Elvis. It's he's not stylizing this hearse because like that's what the movie wants it to be. Like he knows I'm Dracula. I live in a world where cars exist. I'm going to make fucking this because that's cool. And I'm Dracula and I'm
cool. Do you know what would be amazing? Yeah. You know what would be fucking amazing in that? This whole episode's going to be a fix of flick. I know it.
Yeah.
So he gets the hearse set up and you do the scene where it's like the mechanic who he hired a couple weeks ago is like, oh, Mr. Acula, like this is, you know, it took a while to put this all together and I hope you're going to like it. And he's, you know, what the mechanic like walks away or whatever. And Dracula sees the car, looks at it and gets in the back seat and just sits down as if the car is going to drive him where he needs to go. Like it's a carriage. And he just kind of like sits there for way too long. Just and then he gets like frustrated. You could do a lot. I will say the. Every time, and Amanda's, this is like one of our like every year Halloween movies, and it's kind of a fun one to just like make fun of while we're watching. It's a little like Amanda doesn't think too highly of it, but one of the things every time I watch it, I think happens but never does. I always think the plane crashes and he kills at least one of those guys, and but he doesn't. I'm mixing it up with I think I want to say Dracula 2000.
You are mixing it up with Dracula 2000, a movie that we will be discussing at some point.
Yeah, it has an oddly good plane scene early on where someone tries to shoot Dracula and fires wildly, hits the fuselage, and light from the sky comes shooting out, and suddenly like Dracula's getting hit with like laser beam, like thin little laser beams of light that annoy him. It's clever. An interesting little moment.
So my biggest problem with this movie, and I kind of want to put it out there, is did you guys think that Dracula was going to be a good guy? And that, like, he was assembling the monster squad because, like...
No.
So Dracula doesn't kill anybody. He is, very friendly.
He eats those three girls in his closet.
He eats three girls in his closet. He murders several cops as he's trying to walk to the...
John Wicks them.
Later on in the film. But, like, in the first half of the movie, before he got to the three girls, I was like, he's getting his squad together because clearly the twist is going to be Van Helsing was the bad guy. And he's going to team up with the kids, and they're going to, like, undo whatever curse Van Helsing put on them so they can be, like, regular dudes again.
Peter, you are both over and under thinking it.
Frank.
Completely.
Frank, I don't have this on my sound pad anymore, but this is where you put in the Fix-A-Flick soundtrack.
The Fix-A-Flick soundtrack? I don't think I have that. Why would I have the Fix-A-Flick soundtrack?
It should be in the Dropbox. I think I put the Sting in the Dropbox because I had to use it before. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's my fix.
But Peter, I immediately knew that he was evil because he's an anaphasic life form, Peter.
But he smiles the whole
because
time.
He's
like, he's a nice guy.
Oh, yes. And the anaphasic life form in Star Trek's episode TNG of Sub Rosa was trying to be a nice guy, too. But he also sucked the life out of people.
I don't have a nice thing anymore.
Dracula doesn't suck enough people's... Next in this movie is all I'm trying to say.
Thank God he finished that sentence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He also like so in the part where he tells Frankenstein to like go like get the kids and like kill them if he has to, like he gets a little tear in his eye. Like he's like he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want the kids to die. And so I kept on thinking, I was like, they're just doing this scene because the twist is going to be that good when we find out Van Helsing was the bad guy.
Well, can I guess the scene that convinced you Dracula was a bad guy? Because I laugh out loud every single time.
The one with the dynamite?
The dynamite? You have to be more specific because Dracula uses dynamite
a lot.
Far
Dracula
too much in this
loves
movie.
Dynamite.
Loves dynamite.
That's another question that I have in my notes is where the fuck did Dracula get all the
three
dynamite?
Separate instances where he uses dynamite. But the one I'm thinking of is unrelated to the plot, unrelated to his plans. He decides when no one is there to go to the kids' treehouse if anything is in there that's of value. Throw dynamite into it and explode their treehouse.
And say, meeting adjourned. As the treehouse explodes.
So he is then aware that there is a monster squad.
There's a much more badass version of this movie where that makes sense. Because I watched this movie hours ago. I didn't understand why he said meeting adjourned until you just said it, Matt.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff cut out of this movie, so maybe there was a little bit more backstory of connecting this all so that he's aware that there is a monster squad hunting him. But in its current iteration, it's just a weird almost non sequitur.
Matt, did you find any information as to what was cut out of this movie?
No, all I was able to get was that the studio demanded that it had to be under 90 minutes, and they cut out whatever they had to, and it was at least 10 minutes worth of footage, if not more.
Mm. There's hints of certain pieces, but I think,
it's got to be a lot of the setup stuff.
I got one little fix. Well, not even a fix, just something I would want to throw in here, because this is the only movie you can do this joke. The midpoint of the movie. The first time Dracula meets the kids, he kidnaps the main kid, and they have their like hero-villain face-off. He's got him tied to a chair in that scary house. Sits him down, and he wants some information. So he takes a goblet, pours some like deep red wine into it, and puts it in front of the kid. And the kid goes, without realizing why this is funny, he's like, I'm 12. I never drink wine.
That would have been great.
That would have been great.
Well, and I like it goes back to like they're kind of getting there, but not quite. And like the same thing with Frankenstein and trying to make him kind of essentially E.T. Played by the inimitable Tom Noonan, by the way. If anybody didn't pick up on
it. I did. And Tom Noonan, he plays Frankenstein with so much soul and pathos. Anytime he was on screen, I was almost about to cry.
It's great. The only time I actually felt something during this movie was when Frankenstein gets ripped into the black hole, and I'm like, oh, I actually feel kind of bad about this.
That was another tip to me where I was like, okay, these aren't the bad guys. Because Frankenstein turns like that. Like the second he meets a little girl, he's like, oh yeah, I'm not actually a bad guy.
The friends chicken shit.
Yes.
That worked really well.
Very little sister energy.
There's no way Shane Black didn't do that.
Yeah.
And the way that they shot that first encounter with her and Frankenstein completely mirrors the encounter with the little girl by the river in the classic Frankenstein movie.
Yes. That's got to be intentional.
I wish they had done more of that. I wish that there was a scene where Dracula has to be like, for 100 years, you people have been writing books and making movies about me and making me into something that I'm not. And I don't like that.
And then with all of the time that we spend on Frankenstein and Dracula, virtually none of it is spent on Wolfman and Gilman.
Yeah.
Gilman.
Yeah. Who shows up Gilman. For all of what, maybe like 145 seconds of the entire film.
Who looks by far the best. It looks so good.
Oh, Stan Winston is teaching a masterclass in makeup and special effects. Like all the Wolfman stuff is great. All of the little like bat puppet stuff is amazing.
The bats are awesome.
The half bat, half Dracula.
Awesome.
Yes. Oh, that freaks me out. Yeah.
Like all of that is completely on point. Mr. Gilman is also on point, but again, has 2 minutes of screen time, maybe,
and that would have been.
It's just dispatched by a shotgun.
Yeah, the obvious creature from the Black Lagoon monster is always the hardest to incorporate into the Universal monsters because that was very much like a sci-fi monster movie made in the '50s, where all of the other classic Universal monster movies were like Victorian Gothic horror movies converted into movies in like the '20s and thirties. I don't know why he always gets looped in, apart from the fact that it was that suit.
He's
is so
the
incredible.
Hawkeye.
Hey, you don't have to say it like that.
He is, but I will say I adore the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I have written a script of a remake of it. But I understand what you need. It needs a thing. It's just an animal. Like it needs a paranormal element to it. Which the script I wrote, the idea of it is it just regenerates like a lizard kind of thing. Where you basically do the lizard thing where you cut the hand off and it grows back right away. It's basically invulnerable in that way, rather than like the Wolfman and Dracula's invulnerability is very abstract. You never see anything heal. You never see anything with any version, really. It's just sort of this.
They're just like super strong and super fast.
Yeah.
It's rooted in magic. It's
rooted in magic. So you cut around.
They're right on the cusp.
Any good movie cuts around magic. That's the trick.
But there's rule sets
to both Wolfman and Dracula.
Yeah.
Like they're invulnerable to a point unless you do these things, which was another thing that bothered me was the fact that there's a setup of there are only two ways to kill a Wolfman. And then we never actually get the payoff for that.
I actually like that. Well, because it's you shoot him with a silver bullet. Well, what else? You throw him out of a window when he falls on a bomb.
I'm glad you caught that. Yeah.
But he survives.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's the thing. Because there's only one way to kill a Wolfman, and that's with a silver bullet.
Yes, right. But I want the scene of the Wolfman T-1000-ing back to...
Yeah.
You know, that's so good because it just does something new with the lore of it. But... two things we're not mentioning that is probably like all other things aside is the single one biggest misstep this movie makes out of everything. If you were to just decide one mistake.
Talking about a teenage girl's virginity for an extended period of time.
That would be a significant one.
Okay, we got two. There's
also the Holocaust survivor story arc, which I'm not crazy
about.
I'm
sorry.
Because it was a little
too much. I think that works really well. I thought it worked really well, but I like that. I know it's something about monsters.
Using that same teenage girl's nude photos as blackmail.
It was the 80s. That's how you get stuff done. Okay, if I may... Hopefully not blow your minds with this. Why the fuck does this not take place during Halloween?
Great question.
There's a lot of fall implied by how many leaves are floating around at the
end.
This
feels pure summer.
Yeah. I think they added those to show the suction of the limbo vortex at the end, but I completely agree. Yeah. When was this movie released? This movie was released
87.
Well, no, I'm trying to think of the release date. It was released August 14th, 1987.
Stupid. Why? Why did you do that?
Because they wanted to bury it because they knew it wasn't very good.
Well. Can we talk about the overly complicated, absolutely atrociously boring amulet plot line that the whole movie hinges on?
Yeah, it's awful.
With just the sheer amount of rules and what it does and this evil and it's only destructible at this time. It's like, why can this not be a little simpler?
That actually doesn't bother me quite as much.
It drives me crazy.
Because so much of like the rules of the monsters, especially the werewolf and the Dracula, are sort of similar. In that, like, you know, the wolfman only transforms in the full moon, the Dracula can be only killed in so many ways. He is attacked by the garlic from the pizza, which is, I think, one of my favorite gags.
That's pretty good.
Throwing in like a super complicated magical MacGuffin kind of works for me. If you're gonna do it, having it tied to this weird vortex to the nether realm is one layer of complication. Above, I think, what I'm going for. I think there's a way to, what I'm interested in, I think there's a way to streamline that the talisman is just the key to open up the gateway. It has nothing to do with, like, pure goodness or pure evil or whatever.
How you fix it is Frank's fix, is just make it on Halloween. Halloween, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you've got your time.
And go full hocus pocus with it, where it's like, oh, if the bad guys don't do this by dawn, then they're back to like change back. Like, there's no reason that the Gill Man is in a specific swamp in Southern California. Like, there's
although I do kind of love that. I mean, if they wanted to make it even funnier, it's like. You know, Dracula has his core team of like the mummy and Frankenstein and the Wolfman, all sort of like magically controlled creatures that are part of his timeline. And then he like falls into Southern California in the 80s. And there's just this fish man that was mutated by various nuclear tests in the 60s. And he's just like, oh, I guess you're here now.
What
does this qualify as a monster? I mean, there's no magic. I guess. Yeah, shit. I mean, if he wants to come, he can come, I guess, right?
And speaking of execution,
he's Aquaman.
I mean, you know. But speaking of execution is that we're how many minutes into talking about this movie, and only I think just now did we mention The Mummy for the first time?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God.
Like, there's either too many monsters, or we're just not spending enough time on the monsters that are not Dracula and Frankenstein.
Which is
a
shame.
Not efficient.
Well, the mummy gets some of the best moments. Like, he gets the closet moment, which, you know, how he stealthed his way into there and for what purpose, who knows, who cares. Oh, great bit. And also the bit where he actually, like, encounters the kids and, like, fights them on the back of the moving Jeep is, like, really solid special effects.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
His demise is great.
Glad. I would have loved to have seen him show up for the end fight too, but like carrying like various bones in his bandages in his arm, just like, I'm coming, guys.
That would have been fun.
Like, he sort of like half reassembled himself and was like, I'm coming,
guys.
He didn't
do
for
a
the
good
fight.
Job of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be
it would have been great. No, watching him get unraveled off the back of an open top Jeep being driven by a concentration camp survivor. with a van full of kids, I was like, that's probably the best part of the movie.
Hashtag brand new sentence.
Fired
by I know.
being unraveled by the coolest kid in the history of kids, probably.
Oh, let's talk about that kid for a second.
What's his name again?
Rudy.
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 We first meet Rudy on a playground. Our main characters have just been bullied by Fred Savage's older brother from the Wonder Years and some other random kid.
Yeah.
You say what'd you say?
And they stomp. Fred Savage's older brother stomps a candy bar on the ground. And this kid bikes up out of nowhere wearing penny loafers, tight jeans, and a leather jacket, looking like the Fonz.
Mm-hmm. With a cigarette hanging out of his mouth.
Lights a match off his heel, and he makes the bully, apropos of nothing, eat the candy bar that he just stepped on. What is this kid doing hanging out with the Monster Squad?
Right?
Why does he care about the Monster Squad? He's so cool. He's probably, like, you know, dealing drugs in the bathroom and sleeping with a teacher. Like, this kid is too cool to actually, like, be a part of this movie.
He is the dream that every nerdy Hollywood screenwriter wished they were in high school.
Age down. He shouldn't work. He really shouldn't.
He shouldn't work, but he does.
The kid
he works better than most of the other kids.
Yeah.
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 No, like, and when he says, like, I'm part of the squad, aren't I? And goes to fight
the brides?
The brides.
Where you going, Rudy?
I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I?
I got up off the couch and was like, yeah!
Yes.
Because I wish I was that kid, too.
Yeah.
He's a total wish fulfillment character for everybody involved. The viewers, the filmmakers. Dracula himself wishes he was that cool. Making steaks in a wood shop and silver bullets and metal shops.
Yes.
Right?
The closest this movie comes to delivering on the actual premise is that 80s montage of kids in school coming up with ways to defeat the monsters once school is over.
Yes.
Like, that is pretty solid.
A montage that, again, was done better in Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much about the iconography of the 80s has been remixes like that, that were like every, I don't want to say cliche, but every trope of 80s filmmaking and music and iconography sort of get mashed together. I spent a lot of time thinking about Stranger Things watching this.
This
could be an episode of Stranger Things if not for all of the IP and them wanting to build their own world. And I wonder I thought a lot about the ways in which, like, the iconography of us looking back and remixing it in to the stories that we tell about that time versus people that are making films within that time having to deal with the same material.
The contemporary mind of the filmmaker.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and like Monster Squad is definitely a part of that for sure.
Oh yeah, if Monster Squad isn't on like the whiteboard as the I forget their names, but the showrunners of Stranger Things,
Duffer Brothers,
planning out, come on, like it's on the list.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, like I said, for me, it's just there's enough of the connective tissue cut out of it that it just kind of throws me around a little bit too much, and I start to get lost in the whys and the hows of the movie, and then forget that I'm watching what is otherwise like fun special effects, perfectly adequate acting, and some okay, potentially Coke-fueled writing.
Yeah. It's a dumb, fun movie, you know, that unfortunately, because we're watching this with an analytical eye, starts to fall short because of all of the other ways in which we know that other movies that have tried to do similar things have been successful.
But that's where I think I liked it, and where I think it's really fun as a Halloween movie, is that it doesn't matter. And you can miss 10 minutes of this movie and know exactly what's going on and come back to it. And, like, you can have this on at a Halloween party. There can be kids there. There cannot be kids there. Like, it doesn't matter. It's, like, it is just entertaining enough. It is just funny enough. It is just sort of adventuresome enough to be, like, a something in the background. You don't have to sit there and pay attention to every single beat to get it. In fact, it's better if you don't.
I just remembered my favorite joke.
What?
You kids are running out of time. For pie.
That is a good one.
If the whole movie was that energy the entire time, I would this would be my favorite movie.
I think that's one of its failings, is that it hits those tones, like it's getting there periodically, but then it backs off of it, or it moves away, or it takes a left turn, and that's when I get lost. And I think if they
had, it's stretched way too thin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way too thin. And not that I want anything cut out. I just want a little bit of time for all this stuff to breathe. This should be like an hour 45 easily. Like this is.
Yeah.
It just needs a little bit more time where it's like, I honestly want a like sub piece of this where Dracula is brought back. Like all the monsters should be like thrown into this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not, rather than like them just kind of like, it doesn't make any, like why the mummy comes to life makes no sense. Even in the nonsensicalness of the narrative of this movie. You want that moment where it's like, okay. And honestly, I think it hinges around like, just make all of the monsters in the museum exhibit. And then you do the night at the museum kind of like that should be connected in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the kids are on a tour for school and they do something, they run off and they go fuck with some amulet and they accidentally bring all the monsters back on the one night you let, you know, black flame candle, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
You lit the black flame candle.
Yeah.
A virgin lit black flame candle. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have a section of the movie where it's all the monsters existing in their own vacuum, doing their monster thing that they always do. And Dracula is the one who kind of like, I guess the closest equivalent would be like Ceres from Galaxy Quest or like Thanos in Endgame, where the villain is like thrown into this confusing world and is so savvy that they actually like Dracula should be the one to be like, oh, right. It's like 100 years later. Like they're now we're like toys. Like he should go through the whole route of like figuring out, and he should be so like scheming that he actually finds the rest of the monsters and bends them to his will. And then the final act, only at the end are all the monsters in Dracula's sort of like court.
There needs to be an assembly sequence essentially.
Yeah.
Or over the course of the movie. It has to be in a minor key.
Like the Van Helsing theme or something.
Monsters assemble.
But one thing I did just remember, though, is that I don't know if it's publicly available anymore, but the TV version of this, like the one that they released that they sold to networks, is longer.
No shit.
I don't know specifically what scenes made it in and all that sort of stuff, but there is a version that they gave to network television when they were licensing this that does have extra stuff in it. I would be curious to see what extra stuff that would be.
Two words, though. Fat kid.
Fuck that.
Poor Horace. I identify with Horace.
If there's one trope of all 80s movies that I, as a man of size in my childhood and a man of size now, could do what the fuck with else.
Yeah.
And is the fat kid trope.
Yeah. And
But he got to kick the Wolfman and the Nards.
And he did nards. Shotgun Gilman, so
that redeems it a little bit.
And honestly, like I would have loved hints that like kid with the shotgun, Horace with the shotgun energy was there the entire time.
Yeah.
You know, like if there was the way that that character was drawn was like more than like there's more to me to offer than just being the fat comic relief to the rest of society.
Yeah.
And this may say more about me than it says about the movie.
No, I think you're right. Well, what kills it is not the idea that his nickname is Fat Kid, which is pretty fucking dumb.
Yeah.
What kills it is his assuming best friends refer to him as Fat Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't they call him Horace? Like, yeah. Even the people that know him best. What kills it is just like it's Chunk is funny because it's like no one else is called Chunk. Yes, it's because he's fat and he's the fat kid trope. But at least it's like original where these specific kids came up with this specific nickname. The term fat kid to me is so repulsive in its laziness rather yeah. than anything else.
Oh, and part of the complaint I have too is that a lot of the kids in the Monster Squad are by and large not drawn well enough to extrapolate characteristics beyond like what their tropes are within the movie. Like the leader kid is the leader kid. That's kind of all you really get. Yeah. You know, and then
his side friend, the second kid,
mm-hmm. yeah,
is actually does nothing the whole film. He has a sister. That's his only thing.
Yeah,
that's his
it's
thing.
Weird that he's set up to be the other half of the coin.
I'm only just
realizing this now.
Yeah, no, you don't need like three or four of the kids.
Yeah,
because you combine those two kids, give the main kid an older sister, and keep the divorce plot whatever. And then you've got the cool kid that shouldn't be there. You've got, you know, husky friend who's a little awkward and is like way stronger than he thinks he is. And you've got the little sister, and that's really all you need.
Yeah,
and the big and sister.
And don't make it a Monster Squad until like just make monsters a thing the main kid's interested in.
Yeah.
It's
weird. It would
be so and much- as much as the monsters should be thrown into the universe, the kids should also be thrown together because they don't know what they're doing and they're the only ones who believe each other.
Oh, that would be so fun if they're not even friends and the craziness at the museum.
Yeah. They all just happen to live next door to each other.
And imagine how much more impactful it is at the end when the National Guard shows up and they announce themselves as the Monster Squad for the first time because they've gone through the trial of fire.
Can I also fix one other thing?
Yes.
Rudy's motivation early on should be to get into the treehouse so he can see the
Yes. Absolutely.
He should know that that's the prime view, and he's like, all right, I'll be in your monster club, but we're going to do it in there, right? Like, yeah, like, let's go up.
I mean, it's the only reason that makes sense for him to hang out with them.
Yes. 100%. Guys, we could make a really good version of this movie.
I was about to say, guys, do we
just
need to remake Monster Squad?
They tried to, apparently, in like 2008, I think. Yeah. And the studio was not interested.
No, honey, that was Van Helsing. That was called Van Helsing.
With Rob Cohen, who directed Van Helsing, and is a real piece of shit. But all these characters are in the public domain.
Wait. Steven Sommers directed Van Helsing.
Oh, Rob Cohen was involved somehow. He may have produced it, but it still does not make him not a real piece of shit.
I think Rob Cohen was involved in this movie.
He was. He was one of the producers.
Of course.
But we could totally remake this pretty much beat for beat, at least based on our excellent fixed concept we've just come up with, without a lot of fight, because Dracula, the Wolfman, the Mummy, well, it doesn't have to be any mummy in particular, but all those characters are public domain now. So
yeah.
Well, that was the interesting thing about this movie, and I don't know how much this is the reason the movie falls short is they didn't actually get the rights to the Universal versions.
Yes. So that blew my mind that this was not a Universal movie.
Yeah.
Why did Universal not make this movie?
Because they're really bad at making movies about their own intellectual property.
Their early, early, early Dark Universe.
Hey guys, remember the Dark Universe?
It was so dark. It was so dark.
Still to this day, haven't seen The Mummy.
No.
Why would anyone bother?
Yeah.
We should.
Have you seen Dracula Untold?
No.
No, I've heard it's not bad, though.
I've heard it's okay.
We should watch it at some point. We should also watch The Mummy. We should just do a commentary on The Mummy.
Next year, we should have a Dracula off.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm going to force you guys to watch Dracula 2000 and talk about it at some point. It's going
to
happen.
I'll do Dracula 2000. I thought we were all going to pick a different Universal monster to...
Yeah, we can do that, too.
Yeah, that's before Peter had a kid, and I sold a van to some hippies, and I think you guys have...
You keep putting those on the same level, and I think we need to collectively shut that down.
Guys, this was a lot of fun.
We should stop.
We came into this...
Let's put a stake in this.
Oh, I was going to say,
we came into this being
tricked by this movie, and we wound up with a treat of a random fix-a-flick episode. Yeah. So, here we are.
I also don't want to discourage people from watching the movie, by the way. It's a fun little 80s kids movie. Like,
just
we have issues with it because I think all four of us went into it with like really high hopes. And I think if I'm going to wager a guess, if I can make a guess just based on how well I know you guys, I think we all identified a little bit with at least one of the characters in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I still want a Stephen King rules shirt. That was the height of my childhood fantasy right there. I was like, man, I would have been a lot cooler if I had a Stephen King rules shirt.
How is that not merchandise?
Great question.
Like that should be along with the produced by Deborah Hill t-shirt.
That's a good one. Are we really not going to talk about that the army shows up at the end of this movie?
Yeah.
Well, it's so disconnected from anything. Like
when you have that much TNT in a situation, I expect the army to show up.
I mean, it's not like the dad runs off and says...
That's not the interesting thing.
It's not even like the dad's...
writes a crayon letter to them.
Oh, is that what it was?
Oh, I didn't even...
Is that how that happened?
You all missed that? Yeah. There's a scene in that montage, that school montage of them sharpening stakes in woodshop and whatnot, where Eugene, with a fucking crayon in like 4-year-old handwriting, writes like, 2:army, send help, monsters are here, from Eugene.
That's
and
dumb.
Hands it to and puts it in the dog's mouth, and that's the last you see of the letter until the end of the movie, where the entire U.S. Army shows up, and the main guy goes, which one of you is Eugene?
It's hilarious. I clocked him writing the letter in the montage. By the time that pays off, I completely disassociated the two. Completely did not realize.
No matter what version of this we make, that is in verbatim.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yes.
It's so stupid.
I don't care for it.
We could have done without
where do
the
we
army.
Stand on all right, so we're wrapping up before we do. Because this is probably our main Halloween episode we're dropping. Yes. So where do we stand on the Universal Monsters? Who's everyone's favorite here? Connor. The coffin's yours.
Yeah, no, I'm a Dracula guy as a character. I've seen that movie probably the most of all the Universal Monsters. I blanket have a lot of love and respect for all of them.
Have you seen the Spanish language version of
Dracula? Yeah. I haven't, no. Although apparently it's better because they would film it at night watching
the sets look better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watching the English language version be shot during the day and be like, oh, we can make this better. Also, now that I'm thinking about it, Invisible Man erasure in the Monster Squad. What the fuck? Where was he?
He was there the whole time, Connor.
Great question.
He was there. I only just saw the original Invisible Man for the first time. It's absolutely wonderful.
Really fucking good, yeah.
It's very good.
Even the original Mummy, which is a weird...
It's the weakest to me.
It's the weakest, but it's very much rooted in, like, we found King Tut's tomb... almost 10 years ago, and we're also really excited about it. But still, I'm into it. I'll cede the floor, though. I don't want everybody else to get a chance to answer.
Okay. Peter, the haunted castle is yours.
A Frankenstein guy, but specifically Bride of Frankenstein, which I think is the better movie.
It is.
Yeah.
That is the Winter Soldier of 100%. The Universal.
Yeah.
No love for First Avenger.
Matthew.
I'd probably have to go Dracula still. But Spanish Dracula is a better movie.
Has anyone watched the Philip Glass version?
Oh,
of
don't
Dracula?
Get me started on that.
It's I watched it. The Philip Glass version of Dracula. It does not.
It's not
for
Philip
me. It
Glass,
does not work
so
at all.
Long and short is they didn't have an original score for Bela Lugosi's Dracula, so Philip Glass scored it.
Oh, that would be terrible.
So the problem not only is it very Philip Glass all of the time, but the mix, at least on the 75th anniversary DVD copy I have, is that it is 66% louder than everything else in the film, so you can't fucking hear anybody talk.
It's louder, and it's like modern recording, so it sounds so clean, and then the dialogue and everything still is has that muffled 30s hiss to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's got to be that VHS that I watched in 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree, Bride of Frankenstein is the best one. My hidden gem one is Son of Frankenstein. Has anyone seen Son of Frankenstein?
Yeah. No.
For those who don't know, Young Frankenstein, the Mel Brooks movie, is making fun of Son of Frankenstein more than any other movie in the Universal catalog.
Yep.
Huh.
Son of Frankenstein stars Basil Rathbone as like Victor Frankenstein Jr., whatever his name is. I think it's Wolf Frankenstein. It's Boris Karloff's only other appearance as the monster. He loses the ability to talk, and I'm pretty sure Bela Lugosi plays Igor in it.
Wow.
It is a solid movie. It has the like constable with the one arm that was attacked by Frankenstein years earlier. That's what that's from.
Oh.
Frankenstein. So, and a lot of different sort of like lines and references and stuff. It is a really good third. It's like the Return of the Jedi of the Frankenstein trilogy. I am a Creature from the Black Lagoon guy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
The movie's flawed. It's kind of like, I think I'm just a sucker because one of my favorite James Bonds is Thunderball. And both Creature and Thunderball are like fucking
just love
really
that night,
bad
that,
films.
That early 60s underwater photography.
I kind of do because like the score gets to breathe. When no one else can. And but they're so self-indulgent with the photography, and they're so blown away that the ability to even get underwater photography. And there's something about specifically Creature that the cameras are so piss poor for underwater photography that it looks like this alien world when you do it. The 4K is coming out in like maybe 6 days, and I need to order it for Creature.
Yeah.
It's a box set with Creature, Mummy, Bride, and the Phantom of the Opera no one really talks about.
That doesn't count.
Universal made a Phantom of the Opera that isn't the like famous one.
Yeah. Honorable mention for Dracula's Daughter, though, because that's a good? Fun one. Yeah. I think when I saw Son of Frankenstein, it was a double feature at the Jersey City Lowe's with Dracula's Daughter. Which is supposed to be it. Dracula's Daughter literally takes place like the night after Dracula ends.
That's cool. Is Bela Lugosi in it at all or no?
Very briefly, and I don't know whether it's just a shot from the original Dracula.
I gotcha.
But if you're just looking for black and white Universal monster movies to watch, it's perfectly serviceable.
I do also kind of like Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. It's a little BVS, you know. But it's in there. It's right. I mean, I think the weird thing about that one is, of all people, Bela Lugosi plays Frankenstein. It's the only time.
Huh. Bela Lugosi played Frankenstein more than pretty much anybody.
Did he?
Yeah.
What other movies did he play Frankenstein? Are you thinking of the other guy? You're thinking of Glenn Strange.
No, Bela Lugosi played Frankenstein. He played Frankenstein in Bride of Frankenstein, I believe. He played Frankenstein
Boris.
Was that Boris?
That's Boris for sure. That's
I know he played Frankenstein a lot.
I don't. I think it's the only time he played. We don't have to.
Yeah,
we can just be wrong quietly.
Yeah, we don't need to document how wrong either of us are.
Maybe 20 minutes ago, I started to realize the edible's hitting me, and I'm so far gone. So
we could cut at any point during the last 15 minutes of recording.
Well, gentlemen, happy Halloween yet again. This is my favorite time of year to podcast with you boys. If anybody else wants to go on any further Halloween adventures with the boys of Fix-A-Flick, last year we did
a Halloween-a-thon. We did all of our favorite like picks. That was the Halloween tree. That was
we did Murder Party.
Yep.
We did Murder Party, Halloween Tree, Lost Boys, and The Blob.
Yeah.
Four good solid selections. Entries.
Yeah.
Yeah. I oddly think about Murder Party a lot.
I watch it every year.
Yeah, I need to watch it again. I will say, does anyone have, and this is a loaded question because I have one, does anyone have a new Halloween movie they recommend to our listeners, to each other?
Define new.
New as in you discovered it. Old movie is fine.
You lead us off, Frank, I'm thinking.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Peter. There is, wow, I really do feel this edible. This is
You're a little high. Yeah.
Amanda randomly on like Instagram, like found a post about a movie called The Lair of the White Worm. Has anyone heard of this? Don't Google anything.
Nope. No.
This is incredible. This might be an every year movie for me. It is so British. It stars.
How British is it?
It's 1980s. The two leads are Hugh Grant and Peter Capaldi.
Wow.
It's based on Bram Stoker's Dracula, but if Dracula was a 60-foot-long albino snake worm in the countryside of England.
So it's God Emperor of Transylvania, is what you're saying?
Look, just throw this on. It's batshit crazy. Peter, you can handle it. It's not that scary. You can handle it.
Cool.
It is so crazy and funny in its weirdness, but it actually does have like proper spooky moments. I think I love it. It's very weird. At some point, when they finally, because at a certain point, you're going to realize they're going to show the giant worm. And based on the budget of the movie, you're like, you cannot wait to see what they do. And it lives up to exactly what you want it to be. But it is like a very original retelling of Bram Stoker's Dracula in a completely unique way.
I will say my recent scary times have been waking up at 3 a.m. and holding a tiny version of me that won't stop staring at me as I force food down its throat. And you keep on thinking that you see things out of the corner of your eye, and it's just him staring at you. And it's a little terrifying.
Jesus Christ.
You think you're better than us, don't you?
I'm glad you picked up on that, Frank.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
Can I just
everyone.
Say what you should have named the kid?
Tell me.
New York.
No, Frank. That's awful. I hope you just ended the episode on that joke and just like go into a laugh track or something.
No, I'm going to, that awkward pause where nobody laughed is going to be four times the length.
Keep it, double it.
That hurt my heart.
Dracula loves dynamite.